is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Lebanon. Lebanon in conflict for many decades, but now we focus on the UN in Lebanon. Malcolm Holein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, joins me as my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome David Schenker, the Taub Senior Fellow at the Washington Institute. David, a very good evening to you. What is UNIFIL? What is its mission in Lebanon? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. UNIFIL is the UN interim force in Lebanon. It's been interim since the early 1980s, so we've been there about 44 years, give or take. And this is an organization that was supposed to prevent conflict between Israel and southern Lebanon. Then you had Hezbollah come along and a mandate change from the UN about what the organization should do. The mandate change said the organization should prevent any arms in South Lebanon except for arms that are held by the Lebanese armed forces or the Lebanese government, and basically deny outside militias, terrorist organizations like Hezbollah, from having weapons in the south. But it hasn't worked out very well.
Malcolm?
Do you see any remedial measures that could be taken? Because every year since its establishment, we've had guests on and we've talked to officials, and American officials keep talking about taking some sort of reform to empower UNIFIL, to shift their role, when in fact they're just appendages of Hezbollah, dependent upon what Hezbollah allows them to do.
Yeah, when I worked for the Trump administration, I tried heroically, I'd say, to reform UNIFIL. But with Secretary Pompeo's support, we basically said we were going to veto the resolution if changes weren't made, or if the mandate, which said that they had to prevent Hezbollah from being rearmed or carrying weapons, if these changes weren't made, that the organization would have to be downsized. You'll recall that after the 2006 war between Israel and Hezbollah, the force was increased to 15,000 troops, up from 2,000 troops. And basically, they're doing nothing but fueling the economy in South Lebanon these days. That the organization, 40 years on, can't verify that Hezbollah has any weapons.
David, to describe the terrain, I visited in 2003, is my memory. It's rocky terrain. It's vast. It gives the feel of being arid. I'm not sure, because there are fields there and farmers work them all the time. It is a dangerous looking landscape when you understand you're up against an international border that is in the hands of bad actors. What I saw almost 20 years ago was a UN post, a bunker lined bunker with sandbags and big white painted trucks with UN on the side and the UN flag. And then within 200 or 300 yards, a Hezbollah post with the Hezbollah flag on top, looking very much like the UN post. Maybe they were built by the same contractor. And Hezbollah was very close to the Israeli border. I was in an IDF observation point that Malcolm directed me to. And there was no alarm at UNIFIL, no particular care that the Hezbollah outpost was armed and had been at the time a threat, a real threat to Israeli citizens, Israeli IDF. Now, that was 20 years ago. Has it changed, David?
Yeah, John, it's gotten worse. What I'd say is that, the bases are a little bit less conspicuous, but they have instead something called Green Without Borders, which is this alleged NGO that's looking after the environment in South Lebanon. And these are basically Hezbollah military bases that they deny UNIFIL access to. So there are these large swaths of land that are probably brimming with missiles and weapons and other types of mortars, et cetera, pointed at Israel that UNIFIL can't access. And they have towers and they're planting trees, which Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, says provide cover for these Hezbollah forces. It is absurd, actually. And little can be done about it, certainly by UNIFIL. And it doesn't appear that the U.S. government, this administration anyway, is committed to trying to change the calculus.
Malcolm, that was several administrations ago. And at the time I was there, it was George W. Bush's administration. In other words, all flavors of the partisan calendar
have gone through this.
Yes, gone through this. And what David's reporting is that there's no change. I would see the same irony today.
Right. And I've been there many times since. And it changes very little. And I was wondering, David, just along those lines, you know, the reports that Hezbollah has built 15 outposts. Is there anybody, any country, anybody, any force that can, short of Israel attacking them, that can get Hezbollah to back down? Because Hezbollah's position weakened since the election. We hear various reports that there's more opposition, less opposition, yet they can do such a blatant act and seemingly get away with it.
Yeah, the Lebanese elections, I think, decreased some of the numbers of Hezbollah supporters. But it decimated the pro-Syrian contingent. The pro-Assad contingent in the parliament. But the fundamental structure of Lebanon remains. Hezbollah and Amal, its other Shiite group that is basically pals with Hezbollah, control all the Shiite seats in parliament. And at the end of the day, Hezbollah has all the guns. Maybe they're less popular. Maybe some of their constituents are upset because they helped contribute to the financial collapse of Lebanon. But they're not going anywhere. It's really about pushing the UN to do more reporting about UNIFIL is not allowed to enter. They're also, of course, right now being attacked on a frequent basis by basically Hezbollah supporters or plainclothes Hezbollah forces in the south. These units are doing their patrols and they're being harassed. It's really intolerable, and there's no reason why 15,000 of them or 13,500 should be in the south. If there's another war, they're just going to become human shields.
David, I did not see the Lebanese armed forces. Did I miss something? Are they there now?
They are there, but they're few in numbers. They're supposed to be accompanying UNIFIL on these patrols to make sure that they're not harassed by the locals. But make no mistake, the Lebanese armed forces don't control the south. It is Hezbollah. They basically also, there are no-go areas for the Lebanese armed forces in the south. Hezbollah calls the shots.
Malcolm?
But what about the impact now of the negotiations over the maritime border, Hafsin's efforts, others, the report that they're not going to oppose the Karish drilling rig that Israel has put in place? Is there an avenue here to indirectly get Lebanon and Israel on a better track? The economic benefits being, of course, significant as well.
Well, it's a good question. You know, when I was in government, I restarted these talks and got them going between the Lebanese and the Israelis. I was optimistic. After all, Lebanon was heading toward bankruptcy. Their currency has since devaluated by 95%. Some 85% of the Lebanese are below the poverty line. You would figure that the government of Lebanon would have some urgency to find some free money, which is essentially, you know, natural gas that they exploit. And yet they came in with maximalist demands, still haven't moved a whole lot on what they want. And I'm not sure that despite what they say, that Hezbollah actually wants there to be any type of agreement over either the maritime and certainly not the land borders with Israel. After all, Hezbollah's raison d'etre is that they are the resistance, quote unquote, against Israeli occupation. And if you solve the borders and there's no more occupation, then why does Hezbollah need all those weapons pointed at Israel? What are they resisting? And so I'm not sure they want to solve the problem, even though there's desperate economic requirement for some money flowing to the coffers of the government of Beirut.
We thank David Shanker of the Washington Institute, Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference Presidents. I'm John Batchelor.